As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Hi, everybody. For the second time this week, there's no stopping us. This is The Ruck, Times and Sunday Times weekly podcast, this week, twice weekly. We're going to talk today about the Women's Six Nations, which starts on the weekend, probably the most eagerly awaited in the history of the women's game, certainly making an impact in terms of television, ticket sales, and interest in what is, after all, a World Cup year. Fantastic prospect. To talk about it, we've got our own Jess Hayden, who knows everyone and everything about women's rugby, so why wouldn't we bring her in? Jess, do me one favour. It's the TikTok Six Nations. What's TikTok?
So it's an app, Stephen, which is a thing that you get on your phone.
And yeah. I know what an app is.
So the TikTok is a short form content platform. It's now the title partner of the women's tournament and also partner of the men's tournament as well. So you might have seen over the men's tournament TikTok sponsorship on things. Essentially, how I understand it, I went to the Women's Six Nations launch. It felt very TikTok-y, so that there were maybe six TikTok creators at the event. There was lots of chance to film TikTok creation, and they had props set up so that we could film stuff if we wanted to. I didn't personally, because I'm trying really hard to engage on TikTok, and because there are huge numbers of women's rugby fans and content creators on there. But I am struggling, Stephen. So I don't think anyone expects you to be on there doing your 1 minute dances just yet. But let me know if you want to.
How do you know I can do a 1 minute dance?
Can do a 1 minute dance if you want to.
Okay. When I started, the paper was printed in hot metal, so that's not really the TikTok era. Also delighted to say we got a special guest from the England squad, Sarah McKenna. Sarah, you're really, really welcome. I know that you'd rather be bursting with energy for the big kickoff, but hamstring got in the way.
Yep, got an injury back in the Autumn Internationals, second hamstring injury in just over a year. So this one took a little bit longer to recover from. Unfortunately, the timings just didn't work out, but I've been in the England camp for the past couple of weeks. We've been going hard at it, but I think this game just came a couple of weeks too soon for me.
Do you hope that you can get back and get some action in the Six Nations before it ends?
I do hope so, of course. Luckily, there is a Prem competition happening whilst the Six Nations is going on, so I hope to get a few minutes in that, at least, so then I won't be going into cold into any Red Roses fixtures if I'm so lucky to be picked. But even so, the Red Roses camps are hard as nails, so if you can get through one of those camps, you're probably good to go when it comes to the first whistle.
Okay, Sarah had an unbelievably distinguished career. You've won the Premiership, the Premier 15s title with Saracens, and now on 39 caps. So you definitely want to add to that, maybe get you up near 50.
That would be nice, of course. No, I'm just really happy that I've obviously had a year that. A really good year under my belt, good couple of years certainly with Saracens, and had a long career behind me, but the next focus for me is obviously the World Cup. But before that, I've got to get some good performances on my belt. The competition in the squad is unbelievable. The strength and depth that we have, as probably you guys know, having watched Prem 15s and etc., is crazy. New talent coming to the fore all the time. So, yeah, we really do get pushed hard, and we are be fighting my hardest to get a spot.
It's funny because I can remember watching the teams, and people would come through, like Jess Breach came through, and then Shauna Brown would come through. Do you sort of see these players think, Jesus, I wish so many players would stop coming through?
I know what you're saying, absolutely. But I think it's so good for the sport, obviously, and not just saying that to try and be a bit of a martyr here, but I think we're only going to get better if we can push each other hard every single week. And if you look at the women's Prem results, the competition is even more competitive than ever. You know, those top six teams certainly could win on any given weekend. That's what we need to get the sport better. That's what we need to get more people in the stands to create more buzz around the game. So yeah, of course, who wouldn't like an armchair ride at times, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't do anyone any good. It wouldn't do the game any good. So this is exactly where it needs to be.
Well done, very diplomatic. Jess, in your time following rugby, have England ever had so much depth of talent, or indeed has anyone had so much depth of talent?
I think, as Sarah touched on there, the competitive nature of the Premier 15s has been huge for the women's game. Not just for England, though, because there are Scotland girls, Wales girls, Ireland girls, international girls as well. We've got players from all over the world playing in the Premier 15s now. So it's not just England who are benefiting. But of course, I think it's the nature of the full-time professional squad. I hear as well that the camps this year have been exceptional. You were at the St George's camp, is it, in Burton-upon-Trent, where the men's and women's football teams play England. They train there. Yeah. I'd be really interested to know what that's like, because I spoke to Poppy Clear in the week, and she said that they have a treadmill that's underwater with cameras all around it to help rehab and to help you know how you run and stuff like that. So as someone who's injured, what's it been like having access to those kind of facilities?
Yeah, obviously it's next level. You can't beat those facilities. And when you go up there, you genuinely feel like sporting royalty in terms of that setup. It's next level. We go there, you know, get to use the gym, get to use all those facilities, the rehab centre, all that, whatnot. But then when we get down to the nitty gritty and on the pitch, it's just a grass pitch with two sets of posts on at the end of the day. And it's got sort of, I think there are 18 pitches in total, and it's in, you know, the far corner. And then at that point, it's just rugby players on a pitch, you know, getting down to it. So all that stuff is awesome. The food is exceptional. All the rest of it, the recovery facilities are honestly something else. But I think then when we get down to the rugby side of things, it's the same looking pitch as normal. And then that's, I think, that's probably a good thing. You know, not all the bells and whistles. We're there to work hard. So all that stuff is a luxury around it, believe me. And I do really think it'll take us to a new place in terms of making sure that we recover properly, how we interact with each other, the rehab, getting people back quicker, for example. But yeah, we've obviously been hard at work and not letting all that sort of get to our head.
Most people in rugby emerge from the old amateur days. You know, it must be sort of frightening to you guys now that how much you weren't able to achieve because you didn't have the facilities, you didn't have the sympathy or the backup. I mean, does it actually feel that you've played in two different worlds of rugby?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think a question that comes up often is, do you wish you're sort of born 10 years later and whatnot, so you could be sort of a part of this new sort of wave of, I suppose, professionalism. But at the same time, and I imagine potentially as a lot of people my age, you know, we used to, after a Prem game, still do a boat race, like at the end, you know, for the player of the match and whatnot. So I've lived, like you say, in two eras where I've got to really benefit from that side where that camaraderie, being in it together, taking the match shirts home at, you know, at the end of a game, washing them, making sure they're back in time. And I've also been in that era where the shirt's there in the changing room ready to go, the GPS is in it, switched on, the recovery shake is there handed to you after the game. So you're right, I've lived in two eras and I wouldn't change it for anything. And I'm really happy that I've been able to do both and experience both.
Jess, you've you and other rugby commentators and other rugby players have commented on Facebook about, on social media, etc., about things that still hold it back, prejudices and things like that, and also now it's moving. It seems still seems to move incredibly slowly, or slower than you'd want. Do you still think there's a which is more in your heart now, frustration or excitement?
In my heart, there's more excitement than frustration. And I think it's really important to look at where women's rugby was maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. And people like Giselle Mather, Wasps head coach, who was an England player, she talks about having to pay. She spoke on The Ruck about having to pay her own way and pay for her own flights, pay for a hotel, work extra shifts to be able to get an upgrade in a hotel so she had a better shower so that she could play, feel better the next day. All of that. So really, I think that there's a lot that women's rugby has not to be grateful for, but that it's earned, and we can be excited now. I feel like that frustration can still be there for other nations. I mean, the situation in Ireland at the moment is very frustrating, and they are having to battle against their own union and those players having to talk up about that. So yes, there are still frustrations, but I think in terms of where England are, huge, huge leaps forward in the past few years with the full-time professionalism. And one thing that I would like to say on that as well is that we often talk about professional contracts as if it's just the money that players get at the end of the month. And I think it's about so much more than that. I think it's about the support you get off the pitch, with the medical side of it, insurance, all these things that a lot of the other international players don't get and could be taken for granted, but really are so important to that holistic professionalism that I think the women's game needs to strive for. I always say that, yes, we have other professional, semi-professional, etc. models in women's rugby, but they won't be able to compete with England's version until those pathways are set up and those
good point.
Those full kind of the full circle of professionalism is reached.
Do you think that the stand by the Irish ladies was, well, for me, it was one of the great sporting stands ever made, because Irish Rugby Union wouldn't even listen to men players, leave alone women players. And they actually got rapidly what they wanted. They got access to the government, and things were changed almost overnight. Does that give the lesson to people that you can, if you keep together, even the oldest of fuddy-duddies will fall over?
They did make a really good stand, and I 100% support the stand they made, but I feel like a lot of those players have now felt the brunt of making that stand, and unfortunately a couple of really key players haven't made the Women's Six Nations squad for this campaign, when really they should, because they're on excellent form. And those players, there are two in particular, Clona Maloney and Annika Pleas, who really I think should be in the Ireland squad. I think they think they should be in the Ireland squad as well, from conversations I've had, and they're not. And they were two of the most vocal advocates for themselves and for Ireland women. So yes, the stand they took was incredibly important. It was overdue, and I completely think they did the exact right thing, but I don't think that we're anywhere near the end of that conversation, and that the government, whoever it is, I know that they have been speaking to members of the government, should stand in to make sure that the players who do stand up to this are protected, because they're essentially whistleblowers. And if they're not in the team because of them standing out, which I'm not saying they absolutely are, because, you know, I'm not privy to those conversations where about their performance and stuff, but they have been excellent this season. I think that, you know, if we need to protect those whistleblowers.
Sure, good point. Okay, so the story is not quite over yet. It's still running and running. But Sarah, you would have played a lot of places for England. You played at Twickenham for England.
Yeah.
We're now in an area where, when England first played at Twickenham, I think everybody thought, this is wonderful, we played at Twickenham. Which must, indeed, it is wonderful, but then suddenly you got, instead of putting you as the curtain raiser or nearer the big game, we were sitting there in like November in freezing temperatures in a really cold and dark ground. Do you think that now once you've played at Twickenham, which is lovely, you would then support going to King's Home and Leicester and Exeter, where you're going to get crowds?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously the wider picture is to get this game out to new audiences and take it around the country. And I think there's absolute buy-in from every single Red Rose around that. People up from Yorkshire getting to play at Doncaster and the support that they got around that, it means so much to people. It's not too dissimilar to what the Lionesses do. They move the game around the country and play in smaller stadiums so that they can fill them out and really create an atmosphere. I think one of the best days that I had at Twickenham was against the Barbars in a May game, and I think it was about 31 degrees.
Yeah.
Obviously not dark and cold like autumn, autumn. Twickenham. So a very different experience, and there were 30,000 people there before a Barbars game. But I think when we're not obviously hitting those crowds on a regular basis, I think Twickenham seems like quite a cold and atmosphereless place. So we really enjoy taking it around the country, being an extra a lot of times. The whole city knows why we're there, what's happening, say hi to us, ask us about the game, and no doubt they're probably going to be in attendance as well. So we love going around the country and taking the game elsewhere. And I think actually in terms of performance, it lifts our performance. You don't want to become a team who are stale, used to playing at the same place. We've become very good and very accustomed to moving ourselves around the country, moving our whole setup and doing so quickly and getting very used to our settings very quickly. I think when we've got a World Cup coming up in New Zealand, obviously a very long way from home, we're going to have to be very adaptable.
Sure.
And therefore, I think these experiences will stand us in really good stead.
Sure, sure. I mean, apparently there's going to be a big crowd at King's Home. Welford Road, there should be, and then the final. Sorry, getting ahead of myself. You know, the France England game, which may or may not decide the tournament, is at Bayonne, which is another ferociously partisan crowd. So actually, you know, you're going to be picking things up from the sidelines now. From the, you know, I mean, maybe it'll be abuse in the case of the French, but at least it's going to be almost like a dynamic, crackling atmosphere.
Yeah, whenever we've played France away, I think it's been just that. It's always a bit spicy, a bit prickly when you're there. You know, when you do something wrong, they certainly let you know about it. And actually, even when the French do something wrong, they let their own players know about it as well. Sort of jeering, it's not good enough, or the clock's been stopped for too long, they certainly pipe up and you hear that the fans starting to whistle. But no, playing away in France is a huge thing for any rugby player. It's something that will stick in many people's memories. Played in Clermont, and I think, you know, the South Stand is almost over the top of the corner of the pitch. It was an amazing atmosphere.
Clermont is an amazing atmosphere.
Exactly.
Because actually, when you look at it, it only takes about 18,000 or whatever it is. You think there's about 50,000 there, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. So actually, that's something we really look forward to. Obviously, if you haven't experienced it before, as your first time playing France away, I think it'll catch some people. I think you'll walk out and you'll be like, "Oh, this feels a little bit different." But I think, you know, once that whistle goes, like I said, we're very much in game mode, and actually that stuff, other than potentially not being able to hear each other like you can normally in a Prem game, you know, shout calls, you can hear them. You're going to have to lines of communication do change in those atmospheres, so I'd say that's probably the biggest difference that people might not be used to.
Okay. Jess, recently Six Nations has been excellent in the way it's been played by a small number of teams. There's also been huge deficits, huge defeats. Are we looking for something better this year? I mean, Italy clearly improving. Ireland have had their revolution, which may or may not be complete. And we're going to speak to Siobhan Lillicrap shortly about the Welsh team and their progress. But can we look forward to... I don't think it's all going to be draws or titanic contest to the last minute, but can we look forward to a more even playing field this year?
I think so. I think this Six Nations is going to... There are going to be the smallest gaps I think we've ever had between the teams. England, of course, the only fully professional side, we would expect them to win, and we would expect them, you know... I think we're going to hear from Zoe Aldcroft later. I spoke to Zoe at the Women's Six Nations launch, and she said to me that it is kind of Grand Slam or nothing. That is the aim for the team. They really do want to win the Grand Slam. So, of course, potentially, I think we are looking at England winning again, but... That's the reward of their investment, I think. France are very hot on their heels. And in the autumn before last, we saw two exceptionally tough tests between England and France. And we know that competition is tight. And France could absolutely upset England on that final Super Saturday. But between the other teams, I think the gap is definitely lessening. Wales now having full-time players and another... So there are 12 full-time players, 11 who are on semi-professional, part-time retainer contracts. Italy are really improving this last year. Scotland are on an absolute up at the moment, having just qualified for the Rugby World Cup. So they'll be looking to continue that momentum. So, yeah, I think that this is going to be the closest yet. a lot of people on Twitter and even in our Times comment section say, what's the point of watching if England are going to win? Mm. And I do understand that viewpoint, but I don't watch the men's Six Nations just to see who comes top. I think some of the best matches are actually in the middle of the table and not always between the two best teams in the competition. So yes, I think that the competition is still kind of on the premise that England probably will come top, mm. but there are going to be some great matchups lower down.
Just give us an update on the status of the six teams.
So at the Women's Six Nations launch, I spoke to every team to really get an understanding, because sometimes the other teams have been quite spiky about what their status is. So England are fully professional. Wales have 12 full-time professional players and 11 who are on semi-professional retainer contracts. France have 35 15s players who are on contracts that they describe as 75% professional. So those players are encouraged to have additional jobs or studies to kind of help with their rugby. Ireland get per diems, which is just a small amount of money, about £1,000, alongside the Six Nations to help them pay for expenses and food, etc., as they travel. Scotland have 10 players on professional contracts. And finally, Italy only have expenses paid. So we only have one team that are completely amateur now.
Women's game has had to fight for every scrap of coverage, TV coverage. And it's now gone from clips to streaming. And then suddenly it's on BBC Two and everybody's talking about it. I mean, how much of a difference has that made? The series against New Zealand, everyone was talking about it. Think, blimey, I've never seen this before. This is unbelievable. And it certainly let loose a great burst of excitement. I'm not knocking any TV, not knocking satellite TV or anything, but BBC Two in prime time was something.
Yeah, without a doubt, actually. I don't think it was long ago that Poppy Clear was tweeting about Bargain Hunt being on a Sunday afternoon rather, and the women's game was on iPlayer rather than being on the main channel. So I think that was potentially only 2 years ago. So the change within that time is monumental. All of the women's games are going to be available within the Six Nations countries during the duration of the tournament. So I think just putting it in front of people, you know, we've all been there and watched sports that we've never watched before just because it comes on after another program, but like, you know what, I'm into this, I like this. Mm-hmm. And that's usually the way of getting in people's homes and people who wouldn't usually watch the sport. And I think alongside that, that's why TikTok's great, bringing the game to new audiences, just a snapshot of it. People think, I like that, I'm going to look at it more. So I think, yes, sometimes we have to, you know, give people those snippets or just they, I suppose, soak it up without realising, and then all of a sudden they've watched a women's game and they really enjoy it and they want to watch more. I don't think there's anything wrong with those sort of watchers, those viewers, because rugby doesn't have to be everyone's sport, but I think just to catch those few people who actually then become really engaged, I think that's why it's great to have it on primetime TV.
Jess, you covered the Premier 15 so well for us, but it's now become its own industry covering it, and that you see all sorts of people commentating. Think, who the hell's that? And I mean that in the nicest possible way. But it's suddenly, at least you've got a network, and you can see Premier 15 games if you want to.
Absolutely. So this season, for the first time, I presented a Premier 15's game, and it was brilliant to see the broadcast value behind that and the investment from the RFU to see how those games are being broadcast. The women and men who are presenting week on week are exceptionally knowledgeable about the game. They know the players, they know how to say their names, because that's always been a huge bugbear of mine when I watch women's rugby and they get names wrong, they misidentify players, it really annoys me. That isn't a problem anymore in the Premier 15s. You can stream them, you can watch them on your phone. So one game per round at least is on the BBC, so that's either the iPlayer, the website, the app. So that's great. And also we get to see more on Saracens TV online, on the Premier 15s website. So it's a huge thing for the Premier 15s, and it's great to see that the Six Nations are kind of following that trajectory. And I should say that on Monday morning, Six Nations released a statement to say that this Women's Six Nations was going to have the most comprehensive broadcast support that's ever happened before. Mm. So normally in a Women's Six Nations match, there are maybe four or five cameras maximum, and you miss key moments, you don't get to see the right angles that you get to see in the men's game. That's changing for this tournament, so there are going to be more cameras around, more operators, more support, so that we can really see the best angles of the rugby, which I think is fantastic. And they also mentioned that the tournament is going to be shown in 136 countries worldwide, and that now every single country in the Six Nations has announced their broadcast package, and every game will be broadcast in those countries. So in the UK, they're on the BBC, in Ireland on RTE or Virgin Media, in Sky, it's Sky Italia, and France TV have the rights in France. So as you say, Sarah, every single country will be able to watch their watch not only their own country play, but they'll be able to watch every single game in the Six Nations, which I think is huge.
I think, can I just add to that about the increase in cameras is huge, because I think alongside that you get the content and the graphics that come along with it and the metrics. Mm-hmm. So I think usually when people have watched in the past and we don't have those various cameras to go to, when there's a break in play and injury, people start assuming that the women's game is much slower than the men.
Yeah, but actually,
when you look at ball in play time, actually there's pretty much parity.
Good point.
So actually when those graphics get to be pulled up, info, whatnot, you're so much more engaged rather than thinking, oh, this is a bit slow, I might turn over and watch something else.
Mm.
Actually, I think that's huge in terms of elevating the game and taking it to a new level.
Okay, we're just going to concentrate on England a little bit now. Jess spoke to Zoe Allcroft at the recent launch for the tournament. She asked Zoe, was anything other than the Grand Slam acceptable? Grand Slam words that Eddie Jones apparently has never heard of.
Absolutely not. I think we play rugby to, like, win, basically. So all our training, all our hard work, which the girls put in so much, it's all to get those big moments and to be able to perform in those big moments. So to get the Grand Slam is obviously our main goal in this tournament.
So you play Scotland, then Italy, then Wales, then Ireland, and then finally Super Saturday against France, your closest rivals. That game, it's the 30th of April. That must be the one that decides the Grand Slam.
Oh, it's tricky to say, because obviously this year the competition is really rising. Obviously we've got contracts now with Wales, Scotland, they have some of the contracts now as well. So obviously the competition is really, really heating up. So to say that's the decider, obviously we don't know until we get there. But obviously we are concentrating each week as it comes. And obviously we do have that game in the back of our heads, because it is a big game. Whenever we do meet France, it's always a massive competition. We never know who's going to come out on top. And obviously it's France away, and playing in France away, we know it's going to be loud, it's going to be noisy, and they're going to have all their support going for them. So yeah, it's going to be a big one.
That was Zoe, the World Rugby Player of the Year. England starts off with Scotland away. It's got a certain ring to it, like the Calcutta game with the men. Scotland, as Jess said, have had a real boost, but so England will need to be wary, but would really hope to start well up there, surely.
Yeah, without a doubt, of course. First game of the tournament, want to start off with a bang. As you mentioned, so many Scottish players playing in the Prem 15s. We'll know some of those guys, but obviously on the same merits, they'll know about us. So it's going to be excellent. There's going to be some really good matchups. Rachel Malcolm, their captain, as you mentioned earlier, always a fantastic player for Scotland and for Loughborough. So I think it'll be an excellent game. Obviously, Scotland are going to be buoyed by their World Cup qualification, have spent more time together than ever. So I think this will be a bit of a new look Scotland side.
In the series against the Black Ferns, the coach went very much for an attacking back three. You know, like when England are picking the men's team, they always want to get a Tuilagi sort of figure in there. But actually, in terms of 15, 14, 13, it almost everywhere, the coach went for runners and attackers. Does that always work when you're playing on a muddy pitch in Scotland?
Well, I think given that the Women's Six Nations is slightly later, I think we will probably have different challenges that we have had before when the tournament would kick off in late January or early February, for example. So I think actually this only could pay into England's favour in terms of having a pitch that holds up better.
Mm.
So I think it's a real positive thing. England will make no bones about it. They want to play fast. They want to play quick. They really want to physically challenge teams in terms of, you know, physical dominance and in terms of fitness.
Mm.
They want to run teams off the park. So actually, I think in terms of what the product they want to put on the field, their game will, their game and their tactics will reflect that. So I think, you know, like I said, lots of training put in the prior weeks. Mm. They'll be ready to go on this one.
Why would you not, though, if you've got Sarah Byrne up front and, well, probably three hookers who are pretty much on the same level, Shauna Brown. Why would you want to play quick all the time? Why wouldn't you want to try and stuff it up their noses in scrum?
Well, I think, obviously, alongside that, if you're winning front foot dominance with those powerful players, hugely dominant in terms of their carries, then of course you're going to be able to play a fast game. You're not going to slow it down when it's sat at the base of a ruck. Alongside that, we're looking at, you know, of course the game's based on set piece. Having a dominant set piece around that scrum area is huge for England. So having those girls who, luckily enough, are incredibly powerful, can win set piece and then get themselves around the park is, I think, a point of difference for England over a lot of sides.
Fair enough. Jess, where is there a danger to England? Obviously, France away. Where is there a danger to England apart from that? I mean, where is the match they've got to be at their best?
I think it does all rest, in my opinion, it does all rest on that final match, Super Saturday against France. I think that will be the decider. Having said that, though, Ireland on the 24th of April, that's the penultimate match for England. I think that would be a real struggle. But of course, England-Wales is always a huge match. I know that obviously England do win against Wales, but with the renewed support that they've had, I think that Wales will be hot on their heels at King's Home and trying to really make a name for themselves. I think that would be a tough match. We always say there's no easy game in Test rugby. Sometimes there have been in women's rugby. I think there have been some games that England have found easy. But as I said before, I think that gap is closing now, and there will be every match. I think there will be obstacles for England for sure. It's definitely not going to be a walkover for England. I don't think that we can really say that England are going to go through every game and get, you know, 10 tries against each team. It's just not going to be like that anymore.
Okay, well, we're talking about the Welsh game there. Let's listen to Siwan Lillycrap, the Welsh captain. We're with Siwan now. Siwan, thanks so much for joining us in the week of the first Welsh game in the Six Nations. Would it be fair to say that the whole face of Welsh women's rugby's changed recently with professional contracts and with the Welsh Rugby Union, it looks like, finally getting behind you?
Yeah, definitely. It absolutely has. And we're in a much different spot now to what we were 12 months ago, much different spot to probably what we were 4 or 5 months ago. And the face of it has definitely changed. And the way we feel as players, and I've mentioned it a couple of times, actually, it's our confidence levels now it's changed our lives as individuals, which results in the team dynamic changing, because we can prepare to our best ability, recover to our best ability, and make every rep count in everything that we do. So as a result of that, our confidence levels in our execution of what we can do, hopefully on game day, is high at the moment. And we're just super excited to hit off the Six Nations this Saturday against Ireland. And it's going to be an exciting week and an exciting campaign. You know, pressure almost is on us, maybe externally, but you know, performance doesn't happen overnight, and our main thing is that we keep taking steps forward, and that's what we're concentrating on, is what we can control and reaching our performance goals internally.
Presumably, your lifestyle has changed totally, because when you were head of rugby at Swansea, you had to sort of fit training in when you could. Probably got up pre-dawn and was still training somewhere, you know, in the dark. So it must be, does it give you more sort of leisure time now, more time to reflect?
I definitely, you know, I think it has changed my life completely. And I think at first, the first few weeks, I was a bit like, oh, what is this? Like, I haven't got an email to respond to or a million WhatsApps after I come off the training pitch. And I was a little bit shocked that, oh, I've actually got time to maybe do something different. But it's massive. You know, my working day now is completely different. You know, we were doing 80 odd hours a week before, between work, travel and training. So all those extras that I didn't get chance to do for my rugby game, I couldn't do, and that recovery goes out the window, as you say, lack of sleep, you know, up at the crack of dawn in the morning to work, to coach in the morning, pre-student lectures, and then, you know, have a day of work and then travel to train and be home late at night. You know, that those days have gone, and you know, I can get up, meal prep, do my rehab, and when we're in the gym, not rush through a gym session. So it's like a HIIT session. We actually get to get good strength, good physical gains in. And then all those extras I can do as a player, my position specific, or work on something I need to, but I am performing very well, I can do. So, you know, it's absolutely life changing. And also the vibes and the relationships and the pot and that we get to gain as players amongst ourselves, you know, with each other day in, day out, essentially. You know, that's also invaluable. You become best of friends off the field, which will only help you when you get on the field. So it's all really exciting. We're all loving it. But I guess the pressure comes now this week as we hit test week.
Sure, and I should say, I remember when I was playing at Swansea, you were coaching all the time. Every weekend then you'd play for Swansea, Ospreys or Wales, and you just seemed so busy all the time running around. There must be such a mental shift now with this support. You must feel like, as much as the physical side of things and being able to hit the gym and have that extra training time, mentally, what's the difference been?
It's massive. I think maybe that's Jessie spot on. Like, it was just busy all the time. And I think that's maybe first few weeks. I was a little bit, not struggled, but a bit shell-shocked, like, at my life has changed completely. And I don't say that lightly. It has changed completely, because I've got time to recover. I've got time to pick up conversations with my mum, my dad, my family, see my family. And I think when you're in that whirlwind, you're being so busy, like, you also get an overriding sense of guilt. And I absolutely felt that. Like, I felt guilty that I wasn't seeing my grandparents often. I wasn't seeing my nieces and nephews, because all my spare time was on rugby or work, because there's only so many hours in a week. But it's a huge mental shift. I feel like I've got more mental capacity now, if that makes sense, because I haven't got a load of other things that I've got to do or I need to respond to. I've just got my main focus is playing and how I perform and play, and the rest of the time I can enjoy some downtime and enjoy family time and catching up with friends, which we haven't had the chance to do. And so, you know, I feel much more refreshed and a much better spot, really. And that helps your confidence then, you know, that helps your confidence in your ability, and you just feel fresh and you just feel like you can perform everything better.
That's great to hear. And Wales had a warm-up match for the Women's Six Nations a few weeks ago against the USA. What did you learn from that match? Because I believe there were 17 players on the bench. They all got to have a go and they were subbed on at some point. What did you learn about your team?
Yeah, it was massive. You know, the result, you know, looking at the result, it's not the result we would have wanted, but we got everything that we wanted out of the game. It gave girls an opportunity to play. It gave us a chance to try certain plays. It gave us a chance to look at ourselves and review and reflect and correct things. You know, and USA are also a real good outfit. So to measure up, you know, they're physical, they're great athletes, and they've got some outstanding players in that squad. So to be able to measure up against them ahead of an important Six Nations campaign was huge. So, yeah, we got exactly what we wanted out of it. And I think, you know, the girls have given the coaches headaches as well now with selection. What is the best team to go with? And, you know, everyone had an opportunity to play. So, you know, that was really valuable for us.
And so I know that there have been emotional times for the girls, for yourselves, when, you know, you had heavy defeats and you knew you weren't able to prepare properly, etc. What's in store for the Six Nations? Have you set targets, or are you just going to go out and give it a blast, or what? Because the fact that you're professional doesn't mean the Six Nations is any easier, because the opposition will still be difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you nailed it on the head there. You know, the opposition is still going to be tough. And, you know, what we do realise internally is that performance doesn't change and happen overnight. Performance sport at this level, you know, it's not going to absolutely change everything around in a short space of time of 2-3 months just from being professional, and 12 of us professional. And some girls on retainer contracts at the moment, like, that takes time to embed everything that we're trying to achieve in, but we're fully buying into the process. And the main aims for us this campaign is to take steps forward in performance, which I'm confident this squad can do. We had a good autumn campaign. We're in a different spot again now. It's how we take that performance to the next level again and keep building upon that and not taking backward steps, really. And that's the main thing for us, but also concentrate on our game plan, our you know, the aims and targets we've set ourselves internally and executing those. And I think, you know, that's what we need to concentrate on, is what we are expecting of ourselves internally, and hopefully performance then will look after itself, and on the flip side of that, result hopefully. But sure, you know, it's going to be a tough start. Ireland are a good outfit out there as well. They're going to be wanting to start the campaign well, but you know, we're just looking and concentrating on our game plan and how we execute that, and hopefully put in a performance, a full rounded performance really.
Just one more question for me, and one more from Jess briefly. I know you're busy today, but okay. Have you the leisure time you've had, has it have been sort of wandering in your mind to the World Cup? Because it's clearly going to be a fantastic World Cup, another step forward in the women's game, and in the pool you've got New Zealand, Australia, Scotland. I mean, what an absolutely sensational prospect it is. That is, if you've got even time to think about it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's super exciting, and that, you know, that's a goal that is something that is in the back of our minds. We're concentrating on the here and the now. You know, it is something though that we all want to get on that plane. We all want to have that opportunity, and we all want to put in a good performance out there. The exciting thing is we get to play some of the best teams in the world and measure ourselves up against them. Hopefully we can get confidence from this Six Nations campaign and everything that we're going to do over the next 6 months until we reach there, to be in the best spot we can. So we're just super excited at that prospect to be able to go out to New Zealand, play the home nation, play Australia, and play Scotland, who have done outstanding the last 12 months or so, and have done really well to qualify. So, yeah, we're chuffed for Scotland, and we're looking forward to facing them in the Six Nations and then the World Cup as well. But we're taking day by day, really. You know, everything we do every day is going to contribute to how we perform there. So, you know, to be fair to the squad, they've absolutely bought into that, and we're leaving no stones unturned and working hard and making sure we make every rep count and everything that we can do to be in the best place possible. But yeah, what a year is going to be.
You mentioned Scotland there, Siobhan, and you're playing Scotland in your first home game in the second round at the Cardiff Arms Park. You said about building the support around your campaign. Cardiff Arms Park has become kind of your home ground for your matches, and all of your games will be live on BBC. You've been around the game for long enough. How important is that exposure, and how much does it mean to the squad?
Yes, massive. We've seen it in autumns, like game upon game. Our crowd grew because they liked the brand of rugby that we were playing. And, you know, they are our 16th person, the noise, and they really do get behind us, really to spur us on and help us on the field. So it's massive. And, you know, I think due to COVID and not having fans for some time, that autumn made us realise how much we'd missed that during that period, and how grateful we were to have them back, because they're such a great crowd. But playing Cardiff Arms Park as well, you know, in the heart of Cardiff is a great venue, it's a great stadium, and we love having our home games there. So yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, having that home crowd, and hopefully, you know, people who haven't come to watch as a standalone tournament now, you haven't got to pick, do I go and watch the men's national squad or the women's national squad? There's a national game of rugby on every weekend. Come and watch it, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it. So hopefully that will also bolster the people that get behind us and support us. And I don't think, like, one thing I'm living by at the moment, you can't comment unless you've been there and witnessed it and seen and viewed it before you comment on our game. So everyone that did come the last campaign in the autumns really enjoyed it.
Siobhan, well spoken indeed. And we're really grateful to you for your time. And I know that you and the girls have been through lots of ups and downs, and I guess everyone now will be wishing you personally and your team all the best for the Six Nations and beyond. So thank you so much, Siobhan Lyrickup, the Welsh captain.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Okay, that was Siobhan. One thing that is even more emotional for the Welsh team is that Lowry Norcutt has made the squad. Lowry's sister, Ellie, was lost in a car accident a couple of years ago. Daughter to my friend Kim, and Lowry Norcutt is carrying the banner for the family into the Welsh squad this year, so that's wish her all the very best.
Steve, can I just say on that, I watched Lowry's first game in Swansea back in 2017 after her sister Ellie passed away. I watched Lowry play her first game 5 years ago. It was at St Helens. It was Swansea White, which was Siobhan's team. Siobhan was the captain of that team, against an Ellie Norcutt Select 15, which Kim, her dad, put together. And there were some exceptional players on that pitch. And Lowry really held her own. And at the start of the game, players were reluctant to give her the ball, reluctant to tackle her. She'd only lost Ellie a couple of weeks before. But she was phenomenal. She was wearing Ellie's boots at the time. She was a really good player. And since then, she's gone on to play sevens, go to sevens tournaments in Barbados, play for Wales Rugby League. She played against the USA in the other week for that warm-up fixture. And now she is in the Six Nations squad. Lowry has absolutely dedicated the last 5 years of her life to filling her sister's boots and doing what her sister did. And I should say, she'd never played rugby before 5 years ago. She was an elite netballer. She was a phenomenal netball player, but had never played rugby, had no interest in it. So to reach that achievement in 5 years, I think is absolutely huge. And I just wanted to give some context to that because, as I say, it really has kind of been all on her, all out of nothing.
Well spoken. The pressure is now back on you, Sarah, because you have to tell us about TikTok activities and all the other stuff.
I'm particularly interested in TikTok about, you know, TikTok have said to us, oh, we're having a content creator in each camp, and that players are being encouraged to create TikTok content. And I just want to know what that actually looks like, because can they force players to be jolly and make videos and dances? I want to know who's the best players at doing it in camp.
So we had at the start of, well, toward the beginning of the announcement, we had a Zoom call with TikTok, who showed us all the wonderful ways that you can get yourself involved, sort of angles to approach it at, the serious side of things, the fun side of things, filters, all of it. And some people obviously sort of probably started making a cup of tea at that point, and then other people were very engaged in it. So obviously it's probably a bit of a generation thing. The youngsters are really enjoying it at the moment. The likes of Zoe Harrison, Jess Breach are sort of all over it. You'll just walk past them, they'll have the phone up in front of them, and you'll sort of automatically just know to go the long route around. but those guys are loving it, and I think some of the ways that they're getting rugby like onto people's screens is awesome. Getting themselves out there, different ways, creative ways, show their personalities in a way that we've never been able to before. So I think in terms of those individuals and for the sport itself, I think you want to know more about the people, I suppose, behind the shirts, and this is the perfect way to get that insight. I know sometimes it's hard to find out what's happening in camp unless it's produced by the RFU or broadcasters. This is a great way to straight away find out what was happening in England camp today.
How big can the rest of this year be for England, for women's rugby?
I think that 2022 is the biggest opportunity for women's rugby in decades, if not ever, because it's a gender changing year. We have a huge Six Nations, and as we've spoken about, with more professionalism than we've ever had, with a better quality than we've ever had. And that's, as I've said as well, because of the elite level of the Premier 15s and the number of players playing there. But then, of course, we have got the Rugby World Cup in the autumn, and that's huge. Again, we'll see more exposure. We'll see all of that off the pitch. But on the pitch, the differences between the nations has never been more uncertain. Mm. We've seen New Zealand, they're the world defending champions. They won the last World Cup. Yet England had two record-breaking wins against them in the autumn. There is so much up in the air. There's no prediction we can make that will 100% be accurate about the Rugby World Cup. It's huge.
Do you think Fiji might be dangerous floaters because they now have got a world-class performance programme?
Absolutely. There are a number of countries that will stand out and that maybe we haven't considered because they're obviously not in the Women's Six Nations. We don't get to see them as much. Fiji and South Africa as well. The South Africa Barbarians game. Obviously, South Africa there didn't do as well as they'd have wanted to, of course. But they now have a big performance pathway there. So, yeah, there are a number of nations, as you say, that really will stand out.
And Fiji are doing so much better on the seventh circuit now. I think they get a bronze medal Tokyo. So, and I think... If you look at sevens, the path with 15s usually follows. If you get successful with sevens, I think there's usually a successful path to 15s after that.
And there is a huge crossover between the Fiji sevens women's side who then also play 15s.
Let's give the last word to Sarah. Can England do a double of winning the Six Nations and the World Cup?
I think, obviously, first and foremost, got to look after the performances in front of us. Big focus for us is elevating our performance from the autumns, which were some great performances in themselves, but they don't mean anything unless we elevate it for the Six Nations, of course. So in terms of us, we've got some focuses on the field in terms of what we want to achieve. Of course, if we get those right, performances look after themselves. And once again, after that, a bit of a break before New Zealand. So once again, opportunity to get together, improve ourselves once again, and hopefully be in a really good place going to that World Cup.
Okay, Women's Six Nations. TikTok Women's Six Nations starts this Saturday, or rather this weekend. It's Scotland versus England, Ireland versus Wales, and France versus Italy. If recent games are anything to go by, it's well worth everybody's attention. Thank you a million to Jess, our Jess Hayden, for joining us, and thanks to Sarah McKenna, England's fullback. And we wish you both, but especially Sarah, we wish you both a happy season, happy World Cup. Sarah, we wish you a sound hamstring and a big comeback for England.
Thank you.
We're not going to let these two off without giving us their god or goddess of the week. It could be a man, woman, referee. No, not referee. my goddess of the week, as always, when we discuss these issues, is Jill Burns. Jill Burns is the greatest, is the doyenne of English women's rugby. I watched her win her first cap, her 50th. I think I missed her 250th. But we've always been in touch. I love her dearly. She was the first person I ever interviewed, first women's rugby player I ever interviewed in about 1918, just after the First World War. And we've kept in touch since. And I'm going to speak. She's the Lancashire president. And I'm going to speak at the Lancashire president's dinner for her in a few months' time. So Jill Burns is my goddess of the week.
My goddess of the week is Shauna Brown. I watched the premiere of the No Woman, No Try documentary, which is released this week, and it follows the modern life of a women's rugby player, and it, as well as all the achievements of Jill and her generation, the current challenges the players face, and I thought it was excellent. And Shauna Brown spoke so eloquently on that documentary, and of course she's going into the Six Nations now as well, so it felt like a good time to nominate Shauna Brown.
Very good.
Yeah, I think I've got to go with that choice as well. Shauna Brown, obviously doing great things for women's rugby off the field. She is an advocate for many, many sort of good things going on. And I think she's a real leader in terms of that. So all the kudos to her, and she absolutely deserves to have a documentary made about all the good things that she's doing and putting rugby on the big stage.
2-1 to Shauna it is. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road. remote station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.